finishing off my Christmas beers. I'll have a couple of them.
I've got a cider in my hand, so...
Yeah. Bought loads of Boxing Day, because Rachel's best bought 2 crates of beer and a crate of cider.
I might have a Disavano then, with the Christmas drinks.
We've got a load of wine, actually, we've got left over from Christmas, like maybe 6-7 bottles, so...
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got some champagne and stuff to have.
Hello, welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I'm Chris Lappin, and joining me this week, I've got Anthony... sorry again. I've got tongue twisted on Anthony. Don't worry.
It's because you're not used to me being here.
No, my tongue just went weird. Right, start again. Hello, and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I'm Chris Lappin, and joining me this week. Right, again.
We've got some bloopers for the summer.
Oh. I think the Christmas beer is quite strong.
Beckham into Sheringham, and Solskjaer has done it. Leicester City have won the Premier League.
Goals against
Emil Heskey. Could it be 5? Yes, it is.
Frank De Boer slinging out Dennis Bergkamp. Oh, that's brilliant! Oh, that's wonderful!
Hello, welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I'm Chris Lappin, and joining me this week, Anthony Kendrick.
Hello.
And Richard Hale Hudson.
Good evening.
How you doing this evening, lads?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. Very well. I hope you're well too.
Yeah, great, thank you.
So, I'm good.
So to start the show, we'll do a couple of stories that happened since last week. So English football has had its first video refereeing controversy in last night's Chelsea penalty win over Norwich in the third round of the FA Cup. So the big moments of controversy came when Willian went down after he got caught by Closer in the area. But the Chelsea player got booked for diving, but I thought it was a penalty.
It was a penalty, but he obviously shouldn't have been booked, and it probably was a penalty. But for me, it wasn't a stonewall penalty, that's what the VAR says, is that it's got to be a blatantly obvious decision, basically. And for me, it wasn't a stonewall penalty, it was more than likely a penalty, but not 100%.
I always thought the decision was if it was sort of considered 50-50, you went with the option of awarding the penalty.
I thought it was always in favour of the attacker.
Yeah.
But that's a different rule, though. The VAR can only intervene with the referee's decision if A, either the referee asks to see the video replay, or if B, the referee's made a blatant mistake.
Right.
I.e. an offside or a mistaken identity or, if they say it's a 100% blatant mistake, that's the only time VAR is allowed to intervene. And for me, it's harsh, but this is the problem with VAR for me. I'm not in favour of it, apart from possibly for offsides, because with this, you've always got that subjectivity. And I think there's too much subjectivity to introduce it.
For me, I'm against it because I think it will sterilise the game somewhat. I like the controversy that is involved in football. I like...
What would we talk about every week?
Yeah.
Everything was right.
Well, we're arguing about the VAR. We're arguing about this decision, whether VAR should have got
it. It's because he didn't go to the VAR. VAR? I've got it written down.
Yeah.
So
Chris has been on Christmas beers, if everybody's wondering why he's a bit drunk tonight.
But then, okay, let's say for argument's sake VAR intervened and said no, the referee's got it wrong, it's a penalty. We'd still have this discussion because I would then argue VAR shouldn't have intervened because it's not a stonewall penalty. It was more than likely a penalty, but it wasn't a stonewall penalty, so we've still got the discussion.
But every pundit on Match of the Day thought it was a penalty. Well, the commentators thought it was a penalty. And when you saw it in the replay, it was...
Yeah, it's that thing of a stonewall penalty. It's like, what percent is a stonewall penalty? 100%? About 99%?
I think basically about 99%. I think I see your point. I think virtually, almost unanimously, any reasonable person would say it's a penalty. I don't know, it's a very difficult thing to quantify. This is why I'm not in favour of VAR, apart from possibly for offsides, because for that it is a matter of fact, or, For think maybe that, but for me, I'm not a fan of it for fouls and free kicks and cards. Possibly the referee going to look at it himself, but that's maybe at his discretion rather than an external body.
Similarly, in regards to the offside rule, you could end up with, especially for the top flight, some form of electronic system that's able to track the line of the players automatically.
Yeah, I've wondered about that. I've wondered if that's possible. I don't know. If there is the technology, I'd prefer that to VAR if that is something that's doable. I don't know if it is something that's doable with the timing of the pass and everything. I don't know if it is possible. I wondered that.
It's got to be in this modern day and age to be able to create something that is, you know, quickly on a pulley that just goes back and forth up along the line in line with the, you know, the line of defence.
But how do you time that with the pass?
You'd have to have sensors on so many things. On all the players, every player would have to have a sensor on, and the ball would have to have a sensor.
Well, the ball has a sensor now, doesn't it?
Yeah, for the goal line technology, doesn't it? Has a sensor, a series of cameras on the. I don't know.
I'm sure it'll come in one day.
Drones is my answer.
Hey, Jim, how about
it? Will definitely come in one day. It's just I don't think it should at this point.
Right, so Stoke City have appointed former Villa and Norwich manager Paul Lambert as their new boss. He signed a 2.5 contract to replace Mark Hughes, who was dismissed last month.
So, I saw a very funny post about that on Twitter.
Yeah.
I can't remember the full details of it, but it was different Pauls that they would prefer instead of Paul Lambert at Stoke. And it was like, Paul Gascoigne, Paul from Paul.
Paul Charcoal?
Paul Daniels, and basically any other Paul in the world, including dead ones.
Well, it's reported that he wasn't one of the top three, because Martin O'Neill rejected them, Gary Rowett rejected them, and Flores rejected them. So was he definitely their fourth choice, or was this pick?
It looks like it. Gary Rowett was definitely pretty strongly linked, and he signed a new contract at Derby, which I'm pretty pleased about. He's come out and said he wouldn't care if he was 15th choice, and I guess that is the way they have to look at it. They've both got to move on.
Yeah.
But with Stoke sacking Mark Hughes, I'm surprised that they've done it. And what you tend to see when a Premier League manager gets sacked is a new manager comes in very quickly, and it's planned. You can see, oh, they've sacked him to bring in such and such a manager. You know, you can sort of understand it aftermath. But with this one, I'm still not sure it was the right decision to sack Mark Hughes in the first place. I'm not convinced by Paul Lambert. But you know, you never know. You know, I've not been convinced by many a manager who's come in and done a good job. So, you know, it was a bit harsh what happened to him with Wolves, though. To be fair,
I found the thing now. List of Pauls I'd rather have managing Stoke than Paul Lambert. Paul Merson, Paul Ince, Paul Gascoigne, Paul McCartney, Paul Blart, and Paul from the film Paul.
Paul Blart from Morecock.
Stoke City spokesman. We are delighted to welcome Paul Lambert to the club. Once he'd been turned down by Gary Rowett, Kike Sanchez-Flores, Martin O'Neill, Bobby Williams, his good friend Jonathan Wilkes, and Trevor from the canteen, we knew Paul was the right man for the job.
How do you say his season going? Do you think he'd have, did he take Villa down? I can't remember. Was it, did he get sacked during that season?
Yes. I think Stoke. I think one of the betting companies have already paid out on them going down now.
Wow.
It's not Bet365, is it?
I think it was Paddy Power.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because there's about 10 teams within a couple of points of each other at the bottom of the table, so it's so congested. I would say Stokes go down, but I wouldn't say it with much confidence.
If he can leak their defence a bit, he might be able to nick a few results. So they conceded on average about 3 goals a game this season.
It's an odd one, because they're not that bad a side. You look at some of the players they've had over the last few years. They've been comfortable mid-table team for a few years, but they've just sort of lost their way recently.
Hmm.
Well, they brought in a couple of decent. They needed a couple of fullbacks. They brought in Bauer, who had a good game against United, I thought, and Staphylidis is coming on loan today. They're a couple of good players. If they can recruit wisely, then you know there's no reason. They've got a decent side on paper. And I know I think it was Darren Fletcher who said some of the players need a rocket up their arse. And you know, on paper they've got a decent side. So yeah, I'm not convinced.
Why you have to lay the blame really at Hughes on it? Well, Mark Hughes for me was one of my heroes at United growing up. Absolutely loved him as a player. Always remember one match where I think they were playing Arsenal and one of the Arsenal defenders took him down in the box at one end. Referee didn't do anything. And he was down for a few seconds. And then he just got up, leapt up, ran the entire length of the pitch to where that player was and just clocked them one.
I thought you were going to tell me about a great goal he'd scored or something.
Oh, no, you remember the moments where somebody's chinned someone. They're your favourites. But Stoke as a club now, the players were fed up. The team was going nowhere. And I think something had to be done. So, it was the right call to, I think, get rid of Hughes. Not the right call to bring in Paul Lambert, I don't think. But
who would you have brought in out of interest?
I really don't know on that. I think they should have been looking before they got rid of Hughes, but I think he just got to the point with the fans where they were clearly just wanting Hughes out.
Right, so do you remember last week when I mentioned the Mayor of Liverpool had reported the Barkley transfer to the police?
Yes!
Well, they have done an investigation and his claims have been found to have no evidence of criminal activity.
Well,
is that to stop us getting sued, you're saying that?
No, that's actually been... An investigation has been launched, apparently. No evidence of criminal activity has been found.
They managed to get an investigation into Man United buying Sanchez yet, because there's clearly some sort of tabloid issue with United buying him rather than City.
Yeah, we'll come on to that in a minute. So, Merseyside Police said officers have found no evidence of a crime after he claimed the circumstances of the deal warranted serious investigation. But I thought I would update the listeners on his claims. So, right. So in part two, we're going to review the transfer window. Not many transfers this week. But...
Hi, this is Stan Collymore, and you're listening to the V2 Podcast.
So the first story I thought was going to... I was hoping Shane would be on this week. So we thought it was going to be a possible transfer to Southampton, but Everton have completed the signing of Theo Walcott from Arsenal in a deal worth £20 million on a 3.5-year contract.
Well, last week we discussed it on the podcast, and I was saying at the time that I hoped for Southampton that they didn't get Walcott. He's a 28-year-old player now that every year people say, oh, we finally reached his potential. He's 28.
I can't believe it. He's been at Arsenal for 12 years. It doesn't seem that long.
Well, it's just, yeah, that's it. He's been at Arsenal now for 12 years. He got onto that World Cup squad. What age was he when he got there? Was he
16? 2006.
And he's never really improved upon that. Is the Walcott that's 28 better than the Walcott that's 16?
All right, I'll play devil's advocate a bit. He's played 400-odd games for Arsenal, scored just over 100 goals. And most of the games he came on as a sub, never really played the full 90 minutes. It's a decent goal return, and I think he'll do all right at Everton. I do. I think, you know, getting to play consistently, look at someone like Zaha, maybe to a lesser extent, but look at someone like Zaha, who did sod all at Man United and at Palace. He's having an outstanding season. Nathan Redmond, I don't think he's a world beater, don't get me wrong. I don't think he's good enough for a team like Arsenal or whatever, but at an Everton, I think I think he'll flourish.
I think we all know the reason why Zaha didn't do particularly much at United, though. Well, he did one particular thing at United, but he wasn't on the pitch.
Yeah, but no. My point is, at a smaller club, I think he'll do well at Everton, and I'll make a bold prediction now. I'll say he'll get into the World Cup squad in the summer.
Based on your last
silence on that suggestion.
your last suggestion was Rooney would only get two goals this season.
maybe I should.
I could see him getting in the squad because he's one of those names that always seems to be around the squad.
Mm.
Whatever he does, actually, for his actual team.
Mm. I don't know. I think he'll do well, but obviously time will tell.
Nice. Which bit do you want to talk about first? Do you want to talk about Man City not signing Sanchez or United possibly signing Sanchez? It's all in the same story, but where should we start on it?
For me, how the press have sort of twisted it, the story all about it, really. Mm. That somehow that Man City have sort of become the saints of football, and all players go to that club and must be, they must pay City to play for them or something. Somehow City weren't going to be offering him £30 million and a £20 million signing on and such. But United, they're now evil for paying slightly bit more in the wages, but not a £20 million signing on fee.
If the deal is true, though, it's obscene, isn't it?
What's he working out? It's
Independent is claiming he's getting £400,000 a week.
Yeah, if it's that kind of figure, it's
Telegraph said £180 million over 4 years, 4.5 years.
He's a good player, but come on, he's not £180 million. He's not worth that in his wages, is he? So it's like £200 million at least in terms of the wages plus transfer everything. It's obscene.
I think he could turn into a new Cantona figure.
Van Persie, I think, is probably the better example. I do think he could do really push United on, and this could be a turn. We could look at this as a turning point in the season. The week where City lost and Man United lost their first game of the season, and Man United signed Sanchez. It probably won't be, but
I don't think it will overly affect this season. And that was one of the things as well. It's like people saying, why doesn't he go to City where he can win things? It's like, he will win the title this year if he moves to City.
Mm.
But isn't that a bit like, you're turning up at a club that's already at the time 12 points clear for the title. You're not really need to do much yourself to get the winner title then.
Yeah, you finally feel yourself cheated for celebrating. Mate, I don't know.
Screen United, it's hardly like he's joining Burnley or something.
In
the world, you've got Paul Pogba. They're not a bad side still, United.
No, but if a player joins Atletico Madrid instead of Real Madrid, or Borussia Dortmund instead of Bayern Munich, you'd call them a bottler. They're not proving themselves at the very, very highest level trying to win the Champions League, etc.
I would not call them a bottler if they went to Dortmund over Bayern Munich. I'd call them actually wanting the challenge of taking down the champion.
Is he a bottler if
going to
United over City?
Okay. I don't know. I'm just thinking, should rather than winning domestic league, shouldn't winning the Champions League be your ultimate goal?
So United possibly have a chance of doing that in the next few years, the squad that he's building?
Potentially, but as of now, you've got to think that City are the most likely team to challenge. I don't want to make this a whole Mourinho argument, but I'm not a fan. Let's put it that way. I'm not so sure.
I'm never a fan of Mourinho, but Mourinho often knows how to play against certain clubs more so than Pep does.
You could argue that, but I'm not so sure about his record. I'm not so sure his record in the big games is as good. It's not as good as Van Gaal's, for instance. His record against Guardiola is not great. Jurgen Klopp's got a better record if you want to use that argument.
Well, certainly after this weekend, but then all on the same.
Yeah, before this weekend.
But on the same respect, United went to Liverpool and everybody moaned at the time that they played for a 0-0 draw. City didn't play for a 0-0 draw. What happened there?
I think a lot of people, Mourinho should have attacked. I don't want to make this. This is a whole argument I didn't really want to get into. But Mourinho should have had a go at City. He should have properly attacked them. Had he done that, he could have done something similar. He had the players at his disposal to do something like what Liverpool did, and he didn't. He went for this defensive, which I also don't like, these defensive tactics, and the fact that he's his record in the big games isn't good enough for me.
I think he plays defensive when it is necessary. you look at the amount of goals United have scored this year, it's not a shabby record at all.
No, that's my exact point. He should be attacking in the big games, and he's not. It's a very good record against Newcastle or Stoke or someone, yeah. You know, that's the easy thing to do, but he should be bolder in the big games. But this is a whole different argument to the Alexis Sanchez. Hopefully, with Sanchez, he decides, you know, he's got an extra player, someone who'll press high up, and it'll he'll go a bit bolder in the big games, I don't know.
I think if you look at the options that United will now have going forward, there's the opportunity there for goals. And I don't think, actually, that Sanchez was the right fit for City. Pep likes his players in a much more structured position role. While with United, you have like Martial, and there's more movement between the attacking options at United.
Yeah. Does anyone know what the history is like with Pep and Alexis Sanchez, or if there is any history with them at Barcelona?
Far from where, they were still good friends. I think, people say that the money has swayed it for Sanchez to go to United. Sanchez was, it's a bit of a Robbie Keane thing to say on this, but he was a United fan as a kid.
Mm.
You know, that could have had some impact upon it. I know it doesn't always have an impact. I know you get a lot of players go to rival clubs of what they were a fan of as a kid. John Terry at Chelsea for many years, and he was a United fan.
Harry Kane's apparently an Arsenal fan.
Yeah, it might have had some impact on him. Gerrard, the Everton kit, won't he, as well, when he was a kid?
So hasn't Jamie Carragher got an Everton tattoo? Was that just an urban myth?
I don't know. It's probably got an I Love Gary Neville tattoo.
So. Right, so reports in Germany are saying that Arsenal want Dortmund striker Aubameyang to be the replacement. It's not exactly a like-for-like replacement. But...
He can play. He doesn't have to always play as an out-and-out striker for Aubameyang. It's only in the last few years that he's become that. Before that, he was a winger or sort of floating behind. I'm surprised Liverpool haven't gone in for him.
Sanchez or Aubameyang?
Aubameyang. To me, he's a perfect fit for that Liverpool attack.
Yes.
Drop Firmino slightly deep behind, and now he's reuniting with Klopp again.
We look at the big movers in the summer, you know, the strikers, Lukaku, Morata and Lacazette. For me, Aubameyang's better than all of them. I'm not sure whether you could have Aubameyang and Lacazette as a front two. But then, to be fair, Arsenal haven't really used Lacazette as well as perhaps they should have done. He's not made the impact expected. For me, I don't want him to go to Arsenal. I don't think it's the right move for him. I'd like to see him replace Benzema at Real Madrid or, you know, go to, I don't know, a Juve or... somewhere, even PSG, if Cavani does end up leaving because of this spat with Neymar, I don't know, but I wouldn't want to see him in the Premier League personally.
Alright, so in part three we'll be discussing all of this week's transfer gossip.
Hello, this is Bianca Westwood from Gillette Soccer Saturday on Sky Sports, and you are listening to the V2 Football Podcast.
Alright, so there's reports are saying that Man City have been told by West Brom that they can have Johnny Evans for $23.5 million, and the deal is expected to go through shortly. A bid is expected to be made shortly. So we discussed this a lot in the summer. Do you see him going now, or do you think he could wait till the summer?
It's still a bit of an odd move for me that he's dependable, but I don't see really how he works at City.
If you assume Kompany's not got the fitness because, you know, he's not someone, he's out sort of out of the equation, you cannot possibly depend on him. And for me, Mangala's not good enough for City, he doesn't fit into City at all. Mm. So, you know, with Stones, Otamendi and Evans as your three main centre-backs, you know, you rotate the three across the course of a season. And yeah, I think he'd be a good signing for Manchester City or even Arsenal, as he's been linked as well. I think he's done very well at West Brom, and yeah, he's an intelligent defender. He's got the Premier League experience, which is crucial, I think, especially for a centre back, because they can really sink or swim. You know, you've seen many who come into the Premier League and just can't hack it. Whereas him, you know, he won't be a complete failure. He might not be a incredible different player, but you know he'll be a decent signing.
Yeah, because we thought they were going to go to a back three in the summer, and he'll be good as the left side of the back three. That was our thinking, wasn't it? So,
I think Arsenal would be a better fit for him. I can't see them going to a back three just at the moment. And you know, he's going to take a bit for him to push Otamendi out of the side. How he's playing at the moment, he's just got a new contract. And Stones is continuing to develop. I think Arsenal, or you know, the money that Everton are throwing about, Everton would have been a good fit.
Mm-hmm. Mm. But I'm not disputing that he's. I'm not going to say he's better than Otamendi or Stones, but over a course of a season, having three centre backs are all good enough. I mean, you know, not many sides have played the same lineup week in, week out. I think three centre, you know, rotating Stones, Otamendi, Evans, and having that across a season is a pretty good back three.
Yeah, but is that something he'd want to do again? Because you know, he was at United and he was always sort of in and out of the side, never really sort of staking a full claim to the first team. He'd be going back to that role.
I think if you look at the other side, you know, at Man United, they're rotating Jones and Smalling and Bailly and Lindelof and the other centre-backs. I think at Arsenal, there's a lot of rotation. At Chelsea, you've got Christensen and Cahill and David Luiz and Azpilicueta and others. You know, I think at centre back, and well, generally, actually, you know, football is less and less about your best 11, and it's about your best 18 or 20 players these days.
Yeah, but he left because he didn't want to be in that sort of rotation settle.
Yeah, I think at Man United, it was more that he was a backup rather than a rotation player. He would only start if there was injuries, whereas at City or at Arsenal, he'd start regardless. He'd start, you know, he'd play. What, 40 games a season, easy.
I'd still have him as backup to the main team.
Okay. Even as first choice, what I'm saying is even as first choice backup, because of the squad rotation you've got, that's still a lot of games to be playing.
Yep. I said Chelsea manager Antonio Conte wants to make a fresh bid for Tottenham's Fernando Llorente after losing out on him in the summer. And then...
Chelsea transfer policy. I'm scratching my head at it at the moment.
Yeah,
there's heavy links as well with
Andy Carroll.
Yeah, Andy Carroll.
Yeah, Sky Sports and like, Telegraph are reporting they want Andy Carroll and West Brom.
I heard figures of up to $30 million for him.
So it's either Sky Sports or Telegraph are saying they'll listen to offers for about $20 million.
Yeah, I think it was Sky Sports.
Being a copy of Hassel for
me. I don't know, I quite like Andy Carroll, but no, you are right. I completely agree with Hero. The Chelsea transfer policy is very strange with Matic leaving, with Llorente or Andy Carroll potentially coming in. It really is a pity that Batshuayi's not had a proper chance at Chelsea behind Costa and now Morata in the pecking order, and this is it for me. This shows that there's not enough with Chelsea. Yeah, they didn't have any injuries and they went to the title last year, but they need, you know, you have to have that squad rotation, and as I've explained before, football is so much about your best 18 or 20 players, not just your best 11, and it really is a pity that Batshuayi's not had the impact at Chelsea because he's not had the opportunity to do so.
You look at that Chelsea squad now, and you know, you go back 12 months, it's nothing like the confidence and the, you know, all the big name players that are there, that Hazard and Kante, they look a shadow of themselves from 12 months ago. And then like the transfer policy that's going on. If they go ahead and end up buying Andy Carroll for, you know, 20, 25 million, they've spent over 100 million on Andy Carroll, Bakayoko and Danny Drinkwater. 100 million on those three players.
I guess Andy Carroll would help with the English quota.
There's better English players out there than Danny Drinkwater and Andy Carroll, though.
It still baffles me, getting rid of Matic and bringing in Drinkwater.
Perhaps do something absolutely crazy with the Chelsea like youth policy and actually keep some of those young players that are actually decent, you know, Ruben Loftus-Cheek, etc., and give them a few games.
Ones have just won the World Cup. It's not theirs.
Haven't they got 38 players on loan? Or it's something ridiculous. I can't remember the number offhand, but they've got. I'm sure they've got the most players out on loan. I'm sure it's 38.
I don't think it's as many as previous seasons. I think it's in the low 30s this season.
Well, that's all right.
Yeah. But there's a lot of really talented young players that they have.
I do know that in the under 23 league, you know, the youth Premier League, Chelsea are one of the top teams. They're not top of the league. I think they're about fourth. They've got one of the best. They've got, you know, potentially very good young players. And as you mentioned, Loftus-Cheek for one, and you know, someone like Ryan Bertrand, who's probably good enough, and he goes off to Southampton, and yeah, you know, the youth will never get a chance at Chelsea.
It seems to be manager after manager not giving them a chance.
Shane will have a go about United nowadays, but you look at Chelsea with and City with their youth policy, they're not, just not getting the chance. You know, I hope to God that City realise. I think they will. I think Guardiola's a big fan of him. But I hope that Phil Foden gets to become a fully-fledged City player.
Mm.
Do you think, with Chelsea though, sorry, I just want to go back to the Chelsea a sec. With Chelsea, do you think that this is possibly Abramovich because no youth players really come through in his whole time? And, you know, we say about how he's a good owner with his hiring and firing culture, but, you know, if you were Conte, if I were Conte, there's no way I'd take chances on youth players, and that's the sad truth because of you know you lose a few games and you're gone.
If you know you're only going to be there for 2 or 3 years, what's the point of blooding people?
From a personal point of view, yeah, you know, why bother
if you're not going to see them see it through?
There seems to be something that always happens with Chelsea. Every time they win the title, the year afterwards they just have a meltdown, and it's not just the players. Does seem to be Abramovich as well. The transfers that he then signs off, but he seems to just become dispassionate about the club the year afterwards. Mm. You know, it's just they're just my little plaything again over there, and then they start doing good, and he'll be all up and giving them the money to bring in a big worldie. But you look who they've bought in this summer, and there's not been one of them that's been. You mentioned those two players, like. You've got Rudiger, centre-back. Do you think he's been amazing?
I was trying to think.
He's not stood out for me, no.
Was John Terry the last player who came through?
Ryan Bertrand's the only one I can think of who played a few times in the first team, and now he's at Southampton. Because there was a big deal about him coming into the team.
Did he start the Champions League final?
Yeah, he started the Champions League final. It was a massive deal made out of it, because I think it was his debut. Or it was his first like major game, apart from a few Premier League sub appearances, and it was a big deal made out of that. But I don't recall anyone else. You know, you got a few like Bamford and a few others who probably got a few sprinklings of appearances, but no one who's been a proper regular.
But Morata, you know, people have mocked sort of United with Lukaku and Arsenal with Lacazette, that neither of them have been amazing in their first season there. Morata has been god awful. either of you saw him against Norwich last night, he was shocking.
No, you're right, he was.
That's that dive at the end when he got, and then talking to the ref the way he did to get sent off. It's just. Shows the frustration.
Half decent at the moment at Chelsea, and when he gets a chance, is Willian.
You're right, Willian. Even in Mourinho's season, you know, where he got sacked. Willian was like the one player who looked like he wanted to play and wanted to try and win games on his own. You're right. It is, but he's kind of second choice, isn't he? Behind Pedro and Hazard as the two main wide men.
My favourite thing on Twitter last night was it was before he even got sent off, but it was when he did the initial dive.
Yeah.
And Gary Lineker, in a moment on Twitter, just tweeted, "Fuck off, Pedro."
I did see that.
Just wouldn't expect that from Gary Lineker, but that was brilliant.
One of our own as well, Nick Davey, he tweeted saying that he hopes Morata gets a 10-game ban, or Pedro gets a 10-game ban, one of the two.
We just mentioned his team in Brighton are apparently putting a £2 million bid for West Brom defender James Collins.
West Ham.
Did I say West Ham, was it? Did I say West Brom?
You said West Brom.
Sorry, I meant West Ham, yeah.
It's alright.
Do you think that's the player they need? Is that somebody a bit more stable at the back? I think they've been doing all right. It's a defensive unit.
Yeah, they've sort of done okay. It's a hard one. They do need a bit of Premier League, you know, sort of know-how, you know, like I'm not sure if it's James Collins, but they do need a couple of Premier League, like, experienced players who've played, you know, 10 seasons in Premier League. So, yeah, I can understand it, but not James Collins himself. I'm not sure he's the right man.
I think they need
I think they need more firepower.
I think they need a really experienced central midfielder.
I was thinking Darren Fletcher, actually, as I was saying it, someone like that.
Mm. Like, at the moment, they've conceded 29 goals in 23 games, which, for their position, isn't bad.
Mm.
You know, you look higher up the pitch, higher up the table, and Arsenal have conceded more than that, in sixth place.
Mm.
Liverpool have conceded one less, with 28. You know, Watford have conceded 42, West Ham 41, Stoke have conceded 50. So, you know, to only concede 29 is good going. But
they scored 16 or something.
They're second lowest scoring in the league, which is the big thing. Like Swansea have only scored 14. They've scored 17 in 23 games. That's where they need to be up in.
So could you?
I'm not.
Because there's a rumor that Sturridge and Ings could be both up for going out on loan. So somebody like that.
I saw Sturridge was wanting to go to Inter Milan, wasn't he? Inter Milan made a loan offer.
Sevilla have as well.
I'm not sure. someone with Premier. I'm not sure. Sturridge, Ings maybe because it'd be a good chance for him to get back to form. I could see.
I was thinking of Ings because potentially work. A couple of years ago when he was at Burnley, it was a similar style of play. He's got a lot of goals.
Yeah, I could see Danny Ings working. I'm not so sure about Daniel Sturridge. No, I don't know. It's a difficult one with Brighton.
Any other guys from the Championship?
That's what I was just thinking of. Someone, but I'm not sure. There's no one who really stands out to me. No, I don't know. I don't really know what sort of striker they need, though. A poacher sort of, you know, Darren Bent's a bit past it these days.
I was thinking of your lad from Derby.
What, Winnell?
Matted Vidra, whatever.
Oh, Vidra, yeah. Vidra, he's a good player. I'm not sure he's what Brighton would want, though. He's sort of more of a... I think they need, like, a clinical finisher sort of guy, and he's more of a... an all-round sort of striker. I know he's scored a lot of goals this season, but he's more of a, you know, all-round player. I think they need a proper clinical finisher sort
they
of.
They wanted to splash the Darren cash. Sort apparently, of Xavi Hernandez from West Ham is available for about 17 million.
Hmm.
He doesn't score that often outside the box. He's a bit of a poacher.
Yeah, I can't see it. I don't know. Did you see him leaving West Ham for that, though?
Apparently they want to get rid of him.
I think he's going.
Yeah.
I think West Ham have decided that they're cutting the losses there. But I think he's looking at possibly going over to Turkey or somewhere, isn't he?
Yeah. He had a decent record in Germany, didn't he? So, you know, a decent German side.
He did first couple of seasons, but he did really tail off before he came to West Ham.
Mourinho likes him as well.
Yeah.
Mourinho said it was a mistake to sell Hernandez. Personally, I think... at the time, it was the correct decision, but, you know, could you see him get a reunion there, maybe? Maybe replace Zlatan, who looks a bit finished.
All right, so should we just go over to Europe for a second? So in the summer, Juventus will make Arsenal pair Hector, Bellerin and Ozil. Want to bid for them too. And then another report saying they want to bid for Eriksen to become their new number 10.
Juve lost Dani Alves, who they had before, who was exceptional for them. I think they're playing Lichtsteiner as their main right back. Either way, it does need upgrading there. And Bellerin, I'm not so sure. I think leaving the Premier League might suit him. In terms of Ozil, maybe. Yeah, it depends on Dybala is the main thing, because that would if he moves for a big fee, and you know it looks like he might, then. You know, Ozil or Eriksen or someone in there would be very ideal for them.
Eriksen must go for a hefty fee now, though.
Yeah, he's been brilliant this season.
But Personally, I don't see Eriksen leaving Spurs, though, unless it's Man City, Real Madrid or Barca, really.
Yeah, I'd agree with you there.
Right, should we finish on a fun one? So, reports in Spain says Florentino Perez believes it's time to replace his attacking trio. He says in the short term, Bale, Benzema and Ronaldo will still shine, but in the summer he's expected to make changes.
Yeah, it's quite Lewandowski, Neymar,
Eden Hazard, other ones mentioned in the article.
Yeah.
That could be a fun three.
Yeah, that would be a cheap trio to bring in.
Yeah.
Money's no object for them, though, is it, really?
At some point it has to be with the financial fair play, but as shown this year, UEFA have pretty much given up on it.
Could you imagine if Neymar joined Real Madrid, though? Because I could see that happening. There was talk he'd eventually go there in the summer and after PSG. And could you imagine the Barcelona fans if that happened?
Oh, brilliant.
I think Aubameyang to replace Benzema's very likely. It's something I'd like to see as well.
I think that ship has sailed. The one I think will end up at Real Madrid is Icardi from Inter Milan.
So do you want Bale and Ronaldo back at United in the summer, and then they can have Neymar and Eden Hazard to replace?
And what I'd heard is Ronaldo had been offered to United to come in the summer.
Yeah.
And Mourinho has said he doesn't want him.
Wow, if you not want him, just for the shirt sales alone.
I'd be very surprised if Mourinho declined Ronaldo, but...
Did they get on well when they was in charge? I can't remember.
It was a love-hate relationship.
Yeah.
I think if Ronaldo does leave in the summer, I think he's going to PSG.
Well, PSG fans.
That'd be some attack, wouldn't it? Mbappe, Neymar, Ronaldo behind Cavani.
Playing in that league, some of the standards of some of them teams would be like 14-0.
Do you imagine, though, the egos of Neymar and Ronaldo together on the pitch?
Oh, God. And you think the Cavani-Neymar arguments about penalties are bad enough? Did you see Neymar wouldn't let Cavani take a penalty to become the record scorer at PSG?
Yeah.
All right, so in the final part tonight, we'll be discussing some international news.
Hello, this is Adam Virgo, and you are listening to the V2 Podcast.
Ryan Giggs' appointment as the Wales manager has divided fans. So, the Man United icon has took his first permanent job earlier this week. Some fans are arguing
Does he have a clause in his contract that he doesn't have to turn up for the friendlies?
Yeah, some of the fans are arguing that his lack of friendly appearances means that he's not committed and he's never been committed to his country. I didn't realise this was a fact, that he failed to make a single friendly appearance between 1991 and 2000.
Yeah, how many games was it in a row? It was something ridiculous, wasn't it?
I haven't got that figure. Across his whole Wales career, he played 10 friendlies.
Yeah, he missed 30 out of possible 40 friendlies.
Yeah.
It's going to be very difficult convincing some of the players to show up, but... I did see that his record in friendlies is very comparable to Gareth Bale's. It's a similar record in terms of, percentage appeared in or something.
He turned up for the big games, and that's what you want, isn't it?
Well, he did say that, over his career he played 1,000 games, and you don't do that without managing yourself carefully and looking after yourself. Which I suppose it'll all get brushed under the rug, I think, and it'll do okay as Wales boss, I think.
For a player that lasted as long as he did, though, in his career, to have only then have got 64 caps is a bit dodgy.
Yeah, but then you think Wales never got to a major tournament.
I know, but he was still clearly the best player of his generation.
If he played them friendlies, that would have bumped it up to 94, wouldn't it? So he still wouldn't have made 100. So.
But then you've also got the fact that he's a... I've lost my train of thought. Okay, I was going to say something interesting. So please edit this out.
A lot said that it was Fergie's doing, which is understandable. Fergie was protecting his assets.
Yeah, the article I read seemed to imply that if a friendly was before a big United game, he'd fall down with an illness.
Yeah, but could you argue that because we're always having a go at these friendlies, we watch England play or whatever, we're always having a go and saying, oh, they're useless, they're pointless, and all this, and Giggs is. Record of turning, he turned up in all the competitive games. It's not like he didn't turn up for half of them. And, you know, we have a go at friendlies consistently for being these pointless international bore fests. So, you know, you're going to have it both ways and say, oh, but he should be showing up. And, yeah, it's pointless.
I think one of the main things I'd argue about him is that I just don't think he's going to make a very good manager. Well, the time when he took over United and obviously when he was Moyes' assistant, he didn't seem to have that much in the way of nuances.
Van Gaal's.
Yeah, sorry. He just didn't seem to be knowing what was going on that much.
No.
You know, it's very...
documentary that showed him when Moyes left and he suddenly got told he was taking over for the remainder of the season. And first thing he did was just basically get together the Nevilles and Nicky Butt and Paul Scholes around his house and ask, what should he do?
Yeah.
I don't know, it's very, very hard to judge him in his time with Van Gaal because he there wasn't much information given about what he did and he didn't really do much by way of interviews, etc. And yeah, it's very hard to know. But I don't know, I think it's a bit of a shame he never got the United job, he never got like a season or anything to prove himself. Obviously, with the circumstances of Mourinho and all that, it maybe worked out for the best, but I still would like to see in an alternate reality what Giggs would have done with United.
Right, so last story of the night, so Northern Ireland manager Michael O'Neill has opened talks with your Scottish FA.
He opened these talks about a month ago, I'm sure we talked about it then.
I think he's been given permission now.
I think last time they agreed compensation.
And they've only just managed to start talking about it. What did they send this letter back?
Apparently they started talking, they said on Thursday, so I'm guessing that means today.
They shouldn't have sacked Gordon Strachan, and I hope Michael O'Neill stays at Northern Ireland, and that's my thoughts.
It's not even like a sideway move, it's such a downward move.
I don't know, in Scotland you do have a few decent young players possibly coming through at the moment, and you've got to just think... population-wise of the country, that you should be getting better players through at Scotland than you are at Northern Ireland.
Yeah, I think that's half of the job he's done as well as... When Northern Ireland, like 120-something in the world when he took over, now they're in the top 30.
He has. He's done a ridiculously good job there. It's crazy.
Right, so before we go, Anthony, do you want to discuss what happened on this month's 72 show?
Yeah, so the January edition of the 72 show, it was a really good show actually. We had former England goalkeeper Tim Flowers on for an interview. He's currently working at Solihull Moors, who are in National League, so he talked a bit about that and a bit about his career. And one of the big stories of the FA Cup, I don't know if you remember Eric Lehigh, the hashtag Get Eric a Dog. So I spoke to Mrs. Lehigh, his wife, about that and about his their dog, which was a very interesting chat, and I'd recommend checking it out. Probably one of the best shows, I think.
We enjoyed her interview. I was a bit of back because I was expecting an American to come on. It's a very funny story. They've called the dog Gunner, haven't they? As a tribute to Arsenal.
We feared the worst. We feared he might not get a dog because he only scored twice. But she had someone. She had someone ambush at her petrol station as well, asking why he hadn't got the dog yet. So she realised that it's only going one way, really.
All right. So thanks for joining us tonight. You can follow us on Twitter. It's at @V2Football, and check out our website v2football.com, where Anthony has put a written version of the interview with Tim Flowers up today. Check that out. So, good night.
Good night.
Good night.